Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 86, The Power of Personal Branding with Jason Moss. Building authentic connection, standing out, engaging audiences, and growing a thriving business. What this episode will do for you is learn about Jason Moss's coaching journey, discovering his evolution from his first online ventures to becoming a multi-six-figure business coach and community leader. Learn the keys to online business success, uncovering the critical factors Jason believes differentiate successful online entrepreneurs from those who struggle. Learn about building an audience with intent, connecting with audiences through a heart-centered approach, focusing on service over self-promotion. Learn about crafting distinctive and authentic content by understanding the power of unique perspectives and personal storytelling in making content that resonates. Discover the role of vulnerability in personal branding, gaining insights into how sharing personal stories and challenges can create a deeper connection with your audience, and understand standing out in a noisy digital landscape by exploring Jason's tips for cutting through content overload by embracing authenticity and fresh ideas. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode of Thought Leadership Studio, I'm thrilled to introduce Jason Moss, a multi-six-figure business coach and leader of a 20,000-plus strong coaching community. Jason has helped thousands of coaches grow their businesses by focusing on authenticity over aggressive tactics. Featured an entrepreneur, Jason shares his journey from his first sale at 13 to scaling a multi-seven-figure business. His unique inside-out approach combines identity with strategy, empowering coaches and anyone seeking to build an online audience to thrive with alignment and ease. In our conversation, Jason reveals key pillars for success, overcoming content barriers, and selling authentically. He leaves us with practical advice for coaches and anyone eager to build online influence and scale their impact. Without further ado, let's jump right into this interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting here across Zoom with Jason Moss, who is a multi-six-figure business coach who has empowered thousands of coaches to grow their businesses and sign more clients. Leading a community of over 20,000 coaches online, Jason integrates identity and strategy to help entrepreneurs build profitable coaching businesses from the inside out. With features an entrepreneur and online business owner, his heart-centered marketing approach offers a refreshing departure from conventional tactics. Jason resides in Boulder, Colorado, as we were just discussing, and enjoys hiking, meditation, and personal growth in his spare time. Welcome, Jason. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
So to give our audience some context about where you're coming from, if they're not already familiar with you and your work, can you share what set you off on this path? Sometimes we talk about the pivotal moment or circumstances, set of circumstances that triggers someone to go on the journey that winds them up on a podcast like this.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I mean, I've always been passionate about a few things, one of which is connection and community and building relationships. The other is marketing. And really, I see marketing as connection and relationships and community. And also, this whole online world is something I've always been really interested in. So my first online business, I think I was 11 years old, I had built this software program that made it so that when I played my favorite computer games, I didn't have to put in the CDs. And after like 6 months of locking myself away in the back office of my home growing up, I programmed this thing and put it down in the world. And I remember one day I woke up, and at this time it was hard to set one of these things up. I had to ask my dad for like a payment processor he had to sign on it. But I got this thing up and running, and I remember one day opening up my email and seeing my first sale come in. And I was just so fascinated by the fact that I could connect with this person on the other side of the world who I had never met in person and build some kind of relationship or connection, in that case, you know, a transaction, right? But that's something that's always been really fascinating for me. And so when I was in high school, I was a musician and singer-songwriter. I built this big online platform on MySpace at the time, which was the big platform that everybody was using to, you know, to share my music and connect with people and really learned so much about building online communities. And later on, spent some time as a director of sales and then became a business coach. But really the common threads, I think, through everything have been a love for marketing, a love for, you know, connection and a fascination around like what makes people tick and how do we build these relationships online? And how do we do that in a way that allows us, you know, to create more of the impact that we want and also to build profitable businesses that allow us to, you know, support ourselves and experience more of the, you know, financial freedom and all the things that we want on a personal level.
Yeah, it just seems like the internet gives every person the opportunity to create financial freedom. But so many try but don't reach. They either maybe give up too early or don't know the right levers to pull to build an audience, or they don't have the skill set necessarily to engage an audience in a message or a clear message developed around what they're doing. What are the critical factors that you see as distinctions in those who are successful at creating a business online versus those who aren't?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the truth is, there isn't one thing. There's probably thousands of them. But when I first started coaching, you know, back in 2016, my first year, I made $4,700. I made almost no money. And I felt like for so long, I was showing up, I was putting myself out there, I was sharing my thoughts with the world, and it felt like no one was paying attention. I would get like two hearts and likes from like my mom and my aunt. And for years, I wondered, you know, what does it actually take to do this? And so this has been something that I've studied for a very long time. And I think there's a couple of things it comes down to. The first thing is, I think you got to have the right intentions. You know, there's lots of reasons you might want to build a platform, but the people that I see that are most successful show up with the heart of service, which means you have something of genuine value to be able to offer others. And your intention for building a platform is not so much to build an audience. It's more like, I have these important things that I want to share and say. And my ability to, quote unquote, build an audience or, you know, build the platform online or have followers or all these things, they're kind of a byproduct of that. So the people that I find that are chasing the, you know, how do we get views? How do we get, you know, how do we build this big thing that's more about me? Those are the people I don't see as successful. It's the people who show up every day sharing unique, innovative ideas from that place of, hey, I know I have something here that can really help someone else.
Yes.
I think that intention is really at the core of what success in business and what success in thought leadership comes down to. And then there's the mechanics. It's how do we stand out in a really noisy world where there, you know, someone pulls up LinkedIn or someone pulls up Facebook, and you know, in the course of a minute, you can see 100 pieces of content. And so we're all so inundated with information. So there really is an art and a science to be able to break through that noise. And there's definitely things that I've learned over time just about being able to stand out in that context. And it's only gotten noisier, I think, over the past few years, which, you know, in some ways makes it more challenging. But in other ways, I think there's such an opportunity for, you know, innovative human messages to really be able to cut through the noise. So there's a mechanic to that for sure, which I'm sure we'll talk about more. But really the heart of service, I think, is underneath it all.
I love that. And that really speaks to the perspective of outside in, of what are you doing for others? Go to their point of view and look at how your business looks and how your message looks. And like I said, the heart of service, really caring about making a positive difference. And I love that you mentioned it, something around I have something that's unique and distinctive, which speaks to, of course, the creativity aspect. Because I believe everybody's creative, but not everybody knows how to access their creativity.
Yeah.
Some people have blocks, you know, belief systems that they're not creative, so they don't really access it, but it's in there. And around this thought stream of wanting to make a positive difference, wanting to share something distinctive, how would someone, say if someone was your client, say, hey, I'm a coach, I feel like I've got something special to share, or I guess it could apply to consultants too, but I feel like I've got something special to share, how would I discover what that is? Or how would I articulate that so that it impacts others?
Well, I think one of the maybe common mistakes that people make in this whole online space, and I've certainly made it too, is there's a balance between the focus on us and what we want to share and whatever, you know, is alive for us in a moment, and also what's going to be of service to somebody else. And I think that in my experience, like when I've gotten really obsessed about understanding who my ideal clients are, who I want to connect with, what their challenges and problems are, how they see their world, it's helped me build a bridge back to what I want to say and how to formulate and how to craft the message in a way that is relevant to them and is going to meet them in their current worldview. And I think so much of creating a message that stands out is about this. It's how do we build that bridge? It's like, you've got something you want to share, but how do you contextualize it in a way that is like relevant to someone else's desires and someone else's dreams and the things that they want or the challenges that they have? And the ability to build that bridge starts with empathy. It starts with understanding somebody else's worldview. It's like, you know, I could go to you and I could say, well, you know, the real reason your posts aren't getting traction is because you're not in the heart of service. But if someone doesn't, they're not even thinking about that. They're probably just feeling like frustrated because they're posting all this stuff and they're you know, not getting visibility, or they feel like their posts are getting lost in the void. That message isn't going to really land. But if I start by saying, hey, you know, I see you out there like posting and sharing your voice, and you're really showing up, and you're not getting the traction you want. And it can feel pretty discouraging sometimes, doesn't it? Now, suddenly I've met them in that moment and I've created a little bit of a connection. And then, you know, once I create that little moment, I can say, you know, I've worked with a lot of people and over time, you know, in helping a lot of leaders build platforms online, what I found is like, oftentimes, like if you're in that place where you're posting, you're not getting the traction you want, oftentimes, you know, what's underneath that is you might not be showing up with the right intentions. Now I've built a bridge from what they care about back into my idea and back into my world. And the ability to do that at scale through a platform, I think ultimately is one of the biggest things that determines, you know, your reach, your impact, your ability to meet people where they are and then bring them into a new idea or a new way of seeing things or a new insight or a new perspective. That is, I think, so much of what it comes down to.
I love that. And I've used the metaphor of the bridge a lot myself to describe the concept of strategic thought leadership, because you've got to lead people from where they are and not be on an island. Need a bridge to the island and the territory on the other side and all the reasons you might want to leave that territory in favor of new territory that you're encouraging them to cross the bridge for. And this has almost universal applicability to anybody who's dealing with online influence, not just coaches. Coaches, of course. Of course, I love coaching. And I think it's one of the highest leverage points. More than teaching, you're dealing with people's mental models, not just knowledge. It's really powerful. And their belief systems about what they can do and what, you know, what's possible for them. It's really high leverage. And people can find themselves in coaching roles within large organizations. They can find themselves in coaching roles in consulting relationships and creating marketing campaigns. And who isn't trying to market? We're all trying to market and sell at least a point of view to those that it will impact in a positive way. So let's get more into the mechanics, thinking about our listener who's might be a coach, he might be a consultant, he might be a marketer, he might be an entrepreneur, a founder, a thought leader of some sort, somebody who's interested in positive online influence. Cutting through the noise, as you mentioned, is a huge issue now, especially with AI-generated content. It just makes it easier for more people to create more content. And I think AI can be a powerful tool, but can also be misused and just create parrot content, more of the same thing everybody else is saying too. Where do you see the lever points? Or where do you see the building blocks of creating effective online campaigning?
Yeah, it's a big question. There's so much to say on this. But to your point on AI, I mean, we have these amazing tools today that make it possible to create lots of content at scale that in many ways is making things harder because you've got more people putting things out there. But in other ways, if you look at the content that's actually being created, a lot of it is, you know, it's very boilerplate. It, you know, essentially is a regurgitation of the past, because that's what, you know, these large language models are doing, is they're just taking lots of data based on things that have already been published and kind of rehashing and recirculating it. So there's a desire for, I think, a couple of things. And the things that really stand out in today's world, number one, you know, to your point on thought leadership, and one of the reasons why we connect and I appreciate the work you're doing, it's what do you have new to say? What's a fresh perspective? What's something that, you know, is genuinely like coming from you that's a new idea? So being able to share those things and not just regurgitate, you know, the same, you know, like the three tips for XYZ type content that maybe worked 5, 10, 15 years ago, the lightweight kind of boilerplate stuff. There's just, it's commoditized now because you have these tools that make it so easy to create that anyone can go into ChatGPT and in, you know, 30 seconds say, write me, you know, a post with 5 tips on how to grow my business. And it's, you know, this lightweight kind of, here's a couple of tips. So that stuff's out. So fresh, innovative perspectives, I think, is one thing. The second thing is your humanity. And we spend a lot of time, like when I work with coaches, talking about building a personal brand, because I think one of the most powerful things that we all have is ourselves, our ability to bring the humanity of who we are into the content and to use storytelling to, you know, share insights and perspectives where we're not just sharing information, we're sharing it through the context of our lives. And I think that is ultimately when, you know, you can take a post, like, for example, this morning, I sent out a post about money. And this was, I think I sent it out to my email list. And I was talking about how I've noticed, you know, that over my journey as a coach, as I've, you know, scaled my business, the more focused I get on making more money, the less money I make. And it's actually the detachment from the desire of more money that paradoxically makes it easier to make more. So I could have just explained that as a concept, but instead I started out at the post and I said, you know, when I was living in Los Angeles and I was single, there were, you know, several years that I was going out on dates and I was meeting, you know, lots of really amazing women. But, you know, we go on these dates and it wouldn't really go anywhere. And I met all these people and it just seemed like things were constantly fizzling out. And I really wanted to be in a relationship and I was trying really hard to make that happen. But it wasn't until I let go of that desire that I met my partner today, Kimberly. And, you know, 4.5 years later, we're living in this beautiful home in Boulder. And that lesson really taught me the value of letting go of the desire for the thing that I want. And this is how it connects to your desire to grow your business. And maybe you're attached to this idea of making money. So I use this personal story and this personal anecdote about my own life to kind of bring in into the concept. And this could have been like a boring conceptual piece of content, but the ability to make it fresh with my own humanity, with my own storytelling, this is the stuff that I think people are really craving today, because we're so inundated with like AI generated, you know, lifeless, you know, stuff that has none of that in it. So when you can show up and kind of fuse your own self and your own being with the concepts and the ideas and bring yourself fully into the platform, I think this is where the real opportunity is. And more so than ever before, the power of a personal brand, I think, is just going to become even more important and even more of a powerful differentiator for people who are really wanting to stand out and make sure that their ideas are heard and cut through the noise.
Yeah. And I understand where you're going with that. And I agree 100%. I've run into people who feel like having a personal brand is about ego, but to me, it's more about vulnerability and connection and being open. But the concept of being vulnerability sometimes is scary to people, to be able to be vulnerable. Have you run into that? And how do you deal with that with a client?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me. It's a very difficult thing for me to do as well. I mean, I'm an introvert by nature. I'm not like someone who loves having, you know, all the lights shining on me. But to your point, I think a lot of this comes down to how you see the act of sharing. And do you see it as a personal act of glorification? It's like, let me, you know, bring all the spotlight on me. Or is it more of, I'm using my own story and my life as a way of teaching and serving and helping others, and even showing others what's possible. You know, when I talk about, and we spend, I help coaches make more money. This is a big part of what I do. So I often talk about my own financial success in my content. And there's a way of looking at that where it's like, oh, you're just, you know, bragging, you're just making it about yourself. And there's another way of looking at it. Like, can I create a possibility for somebody else through showcasing this aspect of my own life, so that when somebody else sees this, maybe if they have a belief of like, oh, this is impossible for me, or like, I can't make this happen, seeing my own story opens the door for them. And so looking underneath, like, the, you can look at the same action on the surface. It's like, you can look at two people who are sharing the same thing, but one comes from an intention of ego, and one comes from the intention of, this is really not about me at all. This is really just about the people I'm here to serve, and completely different. And it will feel completely different. And you'll feel a lot less resistance when you're rooted in service, which is why, coming back to what I, you know, started out with, like, I think honestly, the most important key to success is genuinely showing up in the heart of service. And when you can see everything you do, your platform really is it's not so much about you. It's more about these other people. And even sharing from your own perspective is really still about them. Right. Then everything gets a lot easier and there's a lot less resistance. And the fear around vulnerability often will dissolve away as well, because you see vulnerability not as a self-serving thing, but more as like, hey, me sharing my own challenges or the struggles creates possibilities for others, and it helps other people feel less alone, and it helps people feel like, oh, you know, I'm not the only one out here who is having a hard time with this.
So it's that external focus and being open and showing up. And a guy who was on the podcast last year, I think, as an email company, brought out an interesting concept. He said a lot of companies hide behind the logo, and they would send out really branded messages that didn't connect because there's no human aspect to them. Might as well be AI generated. And he said, when you humanize it and make it a conversation, a real life conversation, and as if you know, you're writing it as if you're sitting there explaining the concept to somebody who's really curious about it, who you just went to a seminar on a subject with, met there, say, hey, let's have coffee and brainstorm together. I'm really curious about how you do this. It comes across very differently from this dry corporate written text.
Totally.
That's the piece a lot of people miss.
Well, it's fascinating to me how you have all these major companies. You look at like Burger King, you know, when they do like a Super Bowl commercial, who do they hire to do the commercial? They usually hire like, you know, Kim Kardashian or whatever, and they spend millions of dollars hiring these influencers because they know that people don't do business with companies. They feel connected to human beings. So they're borrowing the influence of, you know, these people who have built these platforms. Whereas all the little guys, you know, the coaches, the consultants, the people who have the ability to use themselves, to bring themselves into their business, think that they need to look like Burger King. So we got all these small guys trying to be big guys and all the big guys trying to be small guys.
Isn't that funny? It's paradoxical, isn't it?
It very much is. Yeah, it's fascinating to me.
You know, something another guest taught me, a guy named John Seddon, who's got a fascinating consulting group in the UK that helps service businesses have breakthroughs by reinventing how they see customers, how they see service, reinventing their systems, has a concept that goes designing from the outside in and designing to demand. And it's all based on the fact that the customer sets the value. And I think it's just as true that the online audience member is a form of customer, even before they pay money, because they're paying with valuable attention. So yeah, they're setting the value. So if we don't design it from their point of view, it's not going to maximize value. And that means forgetting about the money, in the sense that the money becomes emergent. But isn't it funny when we do that, that emergent money aspect ends up increasing at a far greater rate than it would have if our focus was only on the money, because they're the ones who are in control.
Yeah, it's a byproduct. It's a byproduct of doing the right things. It's not something to aim for directly. And I love what you said about, you know, designing with the end customer, the client in mind. And this is where this interesting bridge between thought leadership and I think there's a way of interpreting that kind of leaves thought leadership aside, where it's like, oh, I'm just going to kind of play within the box that everybody else is playing into, regurgitating the same message that everybody else is regurgitating, because that's what people want. And I don't think that's the right answer. But the other answer is, I see a lot of people who are just, you know, excited about their ideas all day, and they don't know how to meet their people where they are. So they can't build that bridge, and they end up missing out on the ability to gain attention. And that really is the first step to be able to bring somebody into a new way of seeing things. You have to meet them where they are. So it's this interesting dance and balance between those two perspectives, and finding that midpoint between those, that I think is really where the impact comes from.
It is. And in my world, the language we use is finding what people really want is their unmet values that they're not getting from the prevalent message, from the status quo.
Yeah.
You understand the status quo message and the assumptions behind it, and find the audience wants something, a value that doesn't meet. There's your opportunity for thought leadership, because people are silently begging for leadership. They want their lives better. They want to be led to something that brings more fulfillment to them. And if somebody has their best interest at heart, they can sense that. And I'll follow them somewhere new, especially when it's pointed out how this is going to help you get more of what's important to you, or make a smarter decision, or elevate the use of something better you didn't even think of before. This is all in service of you. We're leading you to somewhere that adds value, a new place, a new perspective. So do you help your clients and your audience build, I guess I'd call it a converging circles, or do you have a different model that you use of audience building, where you might have a social media audience and a deeper engaged audience on an email list, or those that get a free ebook? And how do you look at the mechanics of converting a suspect into a prospect, into a customer or a coach?
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar with the converging circles idea, but I would imagine it's probably similar in many ways to, based on what you've described, to what we might suggest or recommend, which is, I mean, I have this concept, it's called the marketing flywheel, when I teach the 101 of how to do this, which is, if you imagine like a wheel, a circle, and you've got three parts to that circle. And there's really like these three parts or like three steps of the marketing process of how do you take a stranger and basically turn them into a client or a loyal follower or someone who's engaged with what you do. And this is the three steps are grow, nurture, and invite. And these are really like, regardless of what platforms you're on, what you're doing, and there's so many different tactics you can use to play this out. But these three steps are really like the fundamentals of any successful marketing plan. And so you've got grow, which is basically we've got some way that we're making it so that more people knew about you today than know about you yesterday. And there's three sources of traffic that you can tap into in order to do this. You can basically buy, borrow, or create. Is the three ways to do this. So you can buy leads, you can go out and buy attention running ads. This is a lot of people do this. We do this in our business. You can borrow attention, which is going to like, this podcast is an example of borrowing attention, like me coming and speaking to your audience. And I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do it. And so hopefully, you know, maybe some of you who are listening, maybe you're listening to this right now and you're like, oh, this Jason guy is kind of interesting. Let me go check out his website. So that's an example of how you might get in front of new people through basically leveraging platforms where other people have, you know, brought people together that you can get in front of. And then create, which is basically you creating content or connecting with people personally through your platforms where you're basically getting in front of new people that way. So we've got those three ways to basically make it so more people know about you today than knew about you yesterday. And then we've got to bring them together in a platform where we can communicate with them. And the way that we teach this is usually we like to have like multiple places where we're communicating with people at once. So like in our business, we have an email list, we've got a text message list, we've got a Facebook group, and we've got a couple different social media channels. So people are tapped in different places and they're generally getting, you know, I'm sharing lots of ideas and lots of content and they're hearing from me in multiple different places. So we're building those relationships with them over time. And then the third step is invitations, which is you've got people who are following you, you're building those relationships over time. And there's always going to be a percentage of people who might be ready to take that next step, whether it's work with you or come to an event that you're running or sign up for your thing, whatever it is. So the next step is really laying out the red carpet to those people and making invitations, which could be like a call to action in the bottom of a post or piece of content, like go sign up for this. Or it could be you reaching out to people and opening up conversations proactively, which is, you know, a great thing that I think a lot of people don't take advantage of enough is the power of, you know, creating those conversations one-to-one and basically laying out the red carpet for your people who are ready to take that next step to work with you or whatever it is that you're asking them to do. So broadly speaking, you've got ways that you're growing your audience. You've got a couple different places you're communicating with them. And then you've got, you know, on a regular basis, you're making those invitations. And that is really like, in a nutshell, what it takes. There's lots of different ways we can do that, obviously. And there's lots of nuance underneath that. But that is what a successful marketing strategy looks like.
Makes perfect sense. And for the listener, and this is something that's come up in a number of places, of when I ask people, what's stopping you from really making it happen, from taking it all the way with what you're doing with online influence? And it seems to be a common factor in a lot of people in a certain audience that it just seems like so much work to be on like five or six or seven different platforms. But are there not ways of designing workflows so you can take your thinking, your ideas, your engagement with your audience and not have to reinvent the wheel every single time you put it on a different platform?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that could be repurposing content. So like we do a lot of that where I'll post something on Facebook and then we'll copy the text and we'll put it in an email. And maybe, you know, that was a video at some point that we kind of turned into a text. So there's lots of recycling going on. The first thing is it doesn't have to be all original new stuff. And sometimes, you know, to your point, we were talking about this earlier because I asked you if we were on video or not. And you were like, oh, well, you know, we're going to record some video too, because maybe we'll take some of these and turn them into like reels or clips that we can post on social media or on YouTube. You know, being able to, let's say, create like one piece of long form content and then using that long form content to pull lots of shorter form pieces of content from can be a great way of getting a lot of mileage out of a kind of a one-shot thing. So you could take a 30-minute podcast and maybe make like 12 reels from it, or turn that into a couple of text posts, and you know, maybe have someone on your team transcribe that, and now that becomes like a post you can share on LinkedIn. So there's lots of stuff like that. But I think a lot of it, because I've worked with a lot of clients on this, we go one level deeper. A lot of it is also the pressure that we place on ourselves to uphold some standard of perfection, or some level of like, is a lot of self-criticism and self-judgment that comes into the creation process that takes something that could really be like, you could sit down in 2 minutes and just kind of bang out an email and it could be great. But like that turns into like an hour of like editing and an hour of overthinking and analysis paralysis. So a lot of what I teach around content creation is less around the tactics of repurposing and more about how do we remove all the barriers that are holding you back from making this easy? Because you could call up a friend right now and just kind of off the cuff, talk about the thing that you're really passionate about and that you know, like the back of your hand. And if you're just casually talking to a friend and not, you don't have that part of your mind that's like analyzing whether it's good or bad or whether it needs to be, you could just rattle content off the cuff and it could be really good. But there's something about the process of creation that, like, when it comes to sitting down and being like, I'm sending an email, now it's like we've got this layer of judgment that clicks on board that makes everything more difficult. So the ability to take a look at those filters, to be able to let go of them, and to treat it much more like my relationship with my audience is like, I'm just every piece of content, I'm just calling them up on the phone like a friend. And so I will wake up in the morning and I send emails pretty much every day to my list. And a lot of people are like, wow, that's a lot. You must be exhausted. And I'm like, no, it actually, number one, it feels fun because I treat it as like a relationship. And it was like, these are my people and I'm excited to get to share and connect with them. And number two, because I really like, I'm not kidding you when I say like, it takes me about 3 minutes to write an email. Like I don't even read it half the time. You know, sometimes there's spelling errors. Sometimes it's, I don't care. It's just like, here's what's alive for me in this moment. Boom, done. And when content starts to feel like that, it becomes very easy and it becomes a lot of fun. And we kind of let go of like a lot of the layers that make it for most people, when people are asking that question, I find that's the thing that they're really coming up against.
That makes perfect sense. You think part of that's our traditional education system where you write a paper in school and it gets graded. Totally. And you feel bad because you got a C because you got a couple grammatical errors in there.
Yeah, I talk about this a lot. Like we are not trained for that. We are trained to be factory workers, which is really like the factory worker model is a model of perfection. It's a modern of creating work to spec. So the English student that goes, turns in the first draft you don't turn in the first draft, you do the first draft, then you read it through, you do a second draft, then you do a third draft, then you make sure there are no spelling errors, and then you finally turn it in, you get a grade. But the process of building platform online is not like that. In my opinion, it's about the creation and release of lots of ideas and being in constant communication, collaboration with your audience. And there's a level of looseness and kind of playfulness to all of that. And a lot of people have to unlearn a lot of the belief systems that were really installed in childhood before they can get to that place. So it's very normal, I think, to have some resistance around that because it's not how we're taught. But the more I've been able to let go of those things, and I remember when I first started creating, online, it was 2016, I started doing YouTube videos, and I would batch my YouTube videos and do like 4 or 5 videos. And I remember I would record these videos and I'd be exhausted afterwards. I would be completely drained. And I just had this idea of like, well, maybe it's just because creating content is hard. And I thought that way for years, but then I realized the thing that was making it hard wasn't me just showing up and being myself, because I could just talk like this for hours. It was the performance. It was the the criticism, the judgment. And as soon as I let go of all of those things, and not to say they aren't there sometimes, they still come back, but there's a lot less rigidity. I found it was all just flowing out. And now I can go out on a walk and I can just, you know, be on a walk and I'm like, oh, I have this really cool idea I want to share with my audience. Let me just pull out my phone and record a quick little video. And it's much more easy, and there's not that layer of criticism that makes everything take 10 times as long.
It makes perfect sense. It's almost like the distinction between an excellent and a less good public speaker, of being focused on the audience and just enjoying the rapport with the audience rather than so self-focused.
Totally. And when I was
and we generate our own performance anxiety through this self-focus until we learn to get that external frame and just enjoy being in the moment with those who are eating up our message. So when you work with people, do you typically work with groups, or do you do one-on-one meta coaching coaches?
We do a little bit of both. Yeah. So we have our flagship program is called Accelerator, and we work with coaches who are established, who already have a business up and running, and they're wanting to, you know, increase their income and sign more clients. And so that's a mastermind, you could say. It's a smaller group program. So we run that, as well as I do a small number of one-to-one clients that I work with that are generally, you know, higher end coaches, on the back end. So a little bit of both. And we've definitely done both over the years.
That's awesome. So we usually wind these interviews up in two ways, Jason. Two kinds of questions. The first one is knowing who our audience is, people who are interested in making a positive difference through large scale online influence, typically, or medium scale, whatever scale is right with them. What would be the top three things you recommend they do to get better at that? They can only come from you. They can start doing right away. That's the first question. The second question, someone's listening to this or watching this and thinking, yeah, I need to connect with Jason and learn more about what he's doing. How would they find you?
Yeah. Well, for the three things, I have to think of them.
Sure.
I would say the first thing is create more. I don't think there's any magic in getting great at this stuff. I think a lot of it just comes down to putting in the reps. And the more reps you can put in, the more you can get in this kind of like create and release cycle, where rather than something taking you like 2 hours to put together, how can you put together something in like 5 minutes and just put it out there? That has really helped me, because as the volume goes up, you get more at bats and you get more opportunities to learn and grow and to see what works and to see what people resonate with and what doesn't. So I think a lot of it is like, how can you create more and how can you remove all the barriers of, you know, perfection that are making, like, this is maybe a long-winded way of answering your question, but there's so much to say on this. I would ask yourself the question, how can I make this easy? That's a question I love to ask myself. And if you look at the process of your thought leadership, of showing up and creating a platform through that question, you live into that question, I think there's a lot of powerful potential and opportunity that will come from that. So how can I make it easy? Create more, which is probably going to be the outcome of that. And I think the third thing would just be remaining grounded in the heart of service, which could be as simple as the next time you show up and you open up your computer and you're about to write something to post, you know, just taking a moment and saying, like, where is my intention in this moment? You know, why am I writing this? What am I writing for? Am I writing because I want to prove something? Am I writing because I feel like I need to create something today to just meet some quota that I have that I got to post like 5 times a week or whatever some, you know, social media guru said? Or am I writing because I have this idea that I know could really help this person? And the more that you can shift the intention to that, the more impact you'll have, the more people will pay attention to you, the more you'll create all of the things that we talked about, the audience, the income, all of those things are a byproduct of that. So creating more, how can it be easy and remaining grounded in the heart of service?
Love it.
And as for connecting with me, I'd love to connect with you. If you enjoyed this, you can go to our website, jasonmoss.com, JasonMoss.com. That's kind of our hub for everything. We've got links to social media, our email list as well. Some of my best stuff goes out there. There's like a guide that you can download on the site that will add you to the list. And you'll get all my like early morning musings that'll help you grow your coaching business. And there's lots of really valuable stuff there. So, and I'd love to hear from you too, if you want to shoot me an email or connect with me on social media and let me know what you enjoyed about this podcast, what you found valuable.
Fantastic. And to the listener, I'm going to link to all this on the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. So if you're listening on an app, the link's in the episode description. And I'm a member of your email list, Jason. And to the listener, I strongly recommend it. Definitely you want to get on.
Oh, well, thanks.
It's very well done and motivating. It's been a pleasure, Jason.
Likewise. Thanks again for what you do as well.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. And you can learn more about that at strategicthoughtleadership.com. And this has been episode 86, The Power of Personal Branding with Jason Moss, Building Authentic Connection, Standing Out, Engaging Audiences, in growing a thriving online business, where we discuss topics like connection as currency, authentic marketing and community building, the real ingredients of online success, heart of service and cutting through the noise, unlocking authentic influence, meeting clients where they are, building the bridge by leading audiences to new perspectives, bringing humanity back with personal storytelling in an AI-dominated world, and vulnerability as a bridge to connection. So if you're listening to this on an app, make sure you click on the link in the description to go to the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com, where there's a summary, a curated transcription of this episode, as well as a short story about Jason and links to his website and social media, including his YouTube page and his Facebook group, and resources that we mentioned, along with free resources like the Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, a guide to organizing the building blocks of your own thought leadership. Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.